Starting off this hour of Civic Media Spotlight, we head to Mainau in the Mare, where Jim and John were joined by Air Force veteran Roy Rogers to talk about his experience in the military.
Radio broadcast veteran John Mainau, along with the city of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mainau and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mainau and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mainau and the Mayor here. Special thanks to Kathy Bratz, Coach Kathy, with our movement, motivation,
no.
Mainau and the Mayor
program. It was management.
No. It was.
How are we doing on the program, Johnny?
Not great.
It was something and
movement.
Movement.
And motivation.
I thought you'd manage the food, the portions.
Management.
No, not management, though.
No. Okay.
It's.
We got to get the name of our show.
We do.
Right,
we have to get
the
show right. She's going to be great. Anyway, we are.
And then Ben and Dana Melker, Bay Area Realty. Phenomenal. I haven't been here. And now we're with a gentleman.
Oh, this guy's going to be great.
A good friend of mine, Vietnam vet, United States Marine Corps. Am I allowed to do the hoorah or no?
Roy Rogers.
I know, but am I allowed to do the hoorah?
Yeah.
With the Marines?
Oh, yeah.
Hoorah.
Did you know he worked in radio, John?
No!
Yeah, I worked, I went to college in 1967 in Superior.
Oh!
And,
You're a yellow jacket.
Yellow jacket with Arnold Schwarzenegger was up there.
That's true.
Yeah, he was, on the football team, Yellow Jacket football team.
Wow.
But I got a job as a DJ from 8 till midnight on the WSSU.
That's awesome.
And my wife helped me out. Went to college as Hayes Scholastica in
Minneapolis?
Duluth,
that's right. Yeah.
And different concerts all over the place. And
how did you end up in that part of the world?
Well, I got out of the Marine Corps in 67. And I wanted to go to college, but I didn't want to stay around here.
Where are you from? What was your high school?
Menasha.
Okay.
Well, I went to Nina High School.
Okay.
Graduated from there. So I ended up in Superior, and that's where I met my wife.
That's awesome.
So, that was a little while ago.
Long time ago.
Congrats to you. Jim, I think that's awesome. No, I just think that's great.
Next week, it'll be 56 years.
Nice.
Congrats.
Congratulations.
That's awesome. Yes.
So you joined the Marines, right?
I joined the Marines, yep.
And what year was that?
63.
Ooh.
May 3rd of 63, I came in an early sign-up, and then I went in, actually, on the 19th of June.
So you didn't know things were going to turn as bad as they turned in Vietnam, did you, at the time?
Oh, I never heard of Vietnam at that point.
Right.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not what you bargained for.
What was your impetus to go in? You weren't drafted. You signed up.
Well, I had a buddy that wanted to join the Army, so we went to the Appleton Post Office, and up above the steps on the second floor, the first door was the Marine Corps, and they pulled us in, and we ended up joining the Marines instead of the Army.
Better salespeople.
Did
That's
you ever
awesome.
Regret that decision?
No, no.
Oh, no.
No.
Not at all? Even in boot camp?
Once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine.
But it's how you're being treated before they allow you to call yourself a Marine.
Oh, yeah. But they cut my hair off right away, and it never grew back.
So you did two hitches, correct?
No, just one.
Just the one.
Okay. 4 years.
Oh, 4-year hitch. Okay.
Yep.
So you get sent to Vietnam. And tell me a little bit about that, what year that was, where you were.
Well, I spent 15 months in Hawaii at Kaneohe Marine Corps Air Station, where I was part of the movie In Harm's Way. John Wayne, Paul Apprentice, and Kirk Douglas, and a whole bunch of others, they filmed that on the Kaneohe Marine Corps Air Station.
Okay.
And so we got $35 a day for 7 days while they did the filming. Then in early March of 65.
You got $35 as a stand-in?
Like the extra light?
Extra?
Yeah, as an extra. Every Marine that on the base got $35.
Oh, so they could film you guys walking around. You couldn't go back at them for, okay.
No.
That made sense, right? So 35. Did you get a speaking line?
No. No.
I'm just kidding.
For residuals?
But if you do see the movie, my platoon comes out between two hills. about halfway through the film. It started out as a Marine Corps movie and ended up as a Navy movie about World War II. Mm-hmm. They told us it was all about the Marines, but we didn't have much to do. We just got paid.
Did you see John Wayne and Kirk Douglas and those people?
Oh, sure.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, that's cool.
And if you look at the opening credits of that movie, Kirk Douglas is riding in a Jeep to Waikiki Beach, and he passes SeaWorld.
Okay.
SeaWorld was not built until in the 50s, and yet this was supposed to be in 1941.
40. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
So it was really cool to be part of it. And we met Otto Preminger.
Sure, the director.
The director, we met him because he had the grand opening of the movie. We saw it right away on the base.
Oh, nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
So then you get sent to Vietnam.
Yeah, in March of 65, we got pulled out onto Pearl Harbor and spent 15 days on a ship going to Vietnam.
So did you guys, because you guys are one of the first real serious infantry groups sent to Vietnam, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we were surprised. We got off the ship, got to land, and the Vietnamese women and kids were there to meet us with bottles of Coca-Cola and flowers for around our necks.
And you guys thought you might be facing the enemy like in Tarawa or something, right?
Yeah. I thought, what the heck's going on? So, but then a mile in, then they started opening up on us, so.
Start taking fire that early, huh?
Yep.
Okay. Wow. So just a little bit about your Vietnam. Then we get to the crusp of this whole story, which I think is one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. But tell me just a little bit about life as a grunt in Vietnam in those days in the Marines.
Well, I dug three foxholes. A foxhole is 12 feet around, 4 feet deep, and three people live in it while you're over in Vietnam or on patrol. A lot of patrols. Every day we'd go out like 10 miles and then walk back to the base. Some days we'd be helicoptered out. So the first thing they did when we got to Vietnam, we had to exchange our American money for
MPCs?
MPC, military payment currency. So I got to tell you this story. I sent a $20 bill to B.F. Sharp's Candy Company in Boston, Massachusetts. And they wrote me a letter and they sent the $10 or the $20 back. They said, we're happy to do this for servicemen. We're going to send you 50 pounds of candy. So I waited and waited. It never came. So I wrote them a letter, said I didn't get it. That afternoon, I got 50 pounds of candy. And then a week later, I got a letter back saying, seeing you didn't get the first box of candy, I'll send you another 50.
Wow.
100 pounds of candy.
So,
at no charge.
And the day that I got the box of candy, we helicoptered out to a village, and I opened up that box and was throwing the candy to all the kids as we were going over all the villages.
That's awesome.
But I hope they didn't hit their heads with candy, because imagine from the helicopter.
Yeah. Oh, pick up your speed. Yeah. What was the name of the company?
Foxtrot Second. Oh, B.F. Sharps.
B.F. Sharps.
Yeah. Oh, I sent them many letters, never got any back after I got out of the Marines, but
thank you.
What a great company, right? I mean, you deserve all that. Yeah. All right.
So life as a grunt again in Vietnam, how much contact were you guys in?
Well, I was in contact in June in Quan Tri, and then in August of 65, we had Operation Starlight, and Echo Company got pretty well wiped out because they went through a village and as they were going up the hill out of the village, then the Viet Cong came out of their holes in the ground and pretty well
decimated
them, cut them down from behind. I was pretty lucky at Foxtrot. I was in Foxtrot 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, and we had the rear echelon for that particular battle. And then a week later, I went R&R to Bangkok, Thailand. So I could never figure out how the stewardesses, early on, there was no showers or way to clean yourself in Vietnam. So I spent from April 2nd to about August 15th without a shower, except for walking through the streams and stuff. We never cleaned. So we get on this big plane and go to Bangkok, Thailand. How did the stewardesses ever... they must have had pins, clothespins on their noses or something. We must have stunk like crazy. But
did you get any leeches on you crossing those rivers?
No, but I got a... We used to set up in a cemetery. I was a squad leader, and we'd go behind the cement outer layers of the cemeteries where, and we'd end up sleeping. If it was on the monsoon, then the leeches would come out while we were laying there sleeping, and we'd get, we'd be, and you can't pull a leech out. You got to burn it out. So you wait. They're hanging all over you, and you wait till you get back to your
I'm gonna
camp, and then you can somebody with a cigarette can pull them out.
When I was a kid, if we had a bloodsucker on our ankle, that's what we'd do. Somebody would have a cigarette, and they'd put the lit part, and the bloodsucker would back out.
Yeah.
Jim, did you ever have a blood sucker?
No, I just I'm getting lightheaded just listening.
You're faint
to this.
Again?
Wow.
Well, Roy, tell us about the day you got hit. If you don't mind.
Yeah.
Well, I got to go back to that. Bob Hope came over there on December 26th, and he brought Joey Heatherton and Anita Bryant, and Anita Bryant was up on stage, and I climbed up on a tree so I could see her. Better, and I got to the top of the tree, and I didn't, well, I was only 150 pounds back then. I didn't realize that the tree was so fragile. I got to the top, and I broke the top of the tree off where I was, and underneath me was an outhouse.
Oh, geez.
And I fell, hit the roof of the outhouse pretty much center. The walls went out. They had taken this great big pot and put it in the ground with a board on top of it. There was like 8 or 10 of them. There were 7,000 of us at the...
Right.
So I fell into that hole. And everything that was in the hole got spread around to everybody around it.
Now you're going to fade. We got to take a quick break. We are with Roy Rogers, and he's got a tremendous story coming up. Well.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media Spotlight. We now return you to part 2 of the interview on Mino and the Mayor with Roy Rogers.
Oh, how real those roses seem.
Welcome back. That's Roy Rogers' girlfriend, Anita Bryant.
Did she sing
this song
this?
That was made famous by Marie Osborne?
Yeah. She also did that, yeah.
Great.
Well, I...
So you're
I,
laying in the middle of the Schmidt house, okay?
Well, my buddies pulled me out. Well, somebody pulled me out and threw me in the China Sea. Salt water is a great cleaner of poop.
I'll bet. Yeah, I would think. Salt.
Wow. So fast forward... I stopped the show that day because Anita Bryant quit singing when she heard this big boom.
Oh, my God.
So 2 weeks later, I had 4 days left in Vietnam, and nobody wanted to go out on a patrol. So 151 of us went out, and they talked me into going back on this patrol. So I was out there, and I stepped on a landmine, and... blew my left side up. I was left-handed when I went in the Marine Corps, and the bouncing Betty came out of the ground and messed my left foot and my left arm and stuff up. So I ended up being evacuated to Great Lakes Naval Hospital.
Can I just jump in? For people that know, a bouncing Betty, it was a type of mine invented by the Nazis, actually, in World War II. You'd step on it, but it wouldn't go off there. It would go up about waist high and then explode, and they did it intentionally that way to try to scare guys so bad about them, because what they would blow off being about waist high.
Yep. Well, and my rifle caught the bomb as it came up out of the ground, so my rifle was in my left hand, and it spread the...
Oh, dissipated a little bit, huh?
Dissipated, and that's why I only got it on the left side. So 2 weeks after I got to Great Lakes, lo and behold, who should come to Great Lakes was Anita Bryant and her husband, live on WGN television at 5 o'clock news. And the nurse that was there, Miss White, was asked who they should interview. So she knew the two of us were had pretty good names, so she sent them down to us. So here the television camera and the lights and all this was come down by us, and they talked to the fella in the bed next to me. She said, "What's your name?" He said, "George Washington." So she talked to him for a while. This was live on the television. Then she turned to me and she said, "Can I ask what your name is?" And I said, "Roy Rogers." And she says, "You're kidding." She turned back to George and she said, "Are you putting me on too?" So,
George Washington
and Roy Rogers and Roy next Rogers. To each other in the hospital.
But she did give me a picture, and it says, "With love, Roy Trigger Rogers from Anita Bryant."
Wow.
So,
did you tell her? Did you ask if she remembered the day her performance got interrupted?
She didn't even. I didn't have to ask her. She remembered it.
No.
No. Wow. She asked me if I was involved in July.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So,
wow.
We had a really good talk that day. I had my reel-to-reel tape recorder next to my bed, and I taped the whole conversation. But, of course, that was 60 years ago, and
right.
that didn't work very long after that. So
that's awesome, though. Yeah.
So tell me about that name. I mean, that's Roy Rogers. Was it? Most people say, come on, what's your real name?
Well, I always say my mother and dad were horsing around.
That's funny.
And they just picked the name Roy Rogers because he was popular at the time.
Yes.
But as I was growing up, I always had a Roy Rogers outfit, cowboy shirt.
I had one.
Chaps and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And
no, I had a Paladin pistols. One. Remember Paladin?
Oh, yeah.
Have Gun Will Travel? Yeah. Remember that one? Huh?
Roy Rogers.
Nope.
No,
okay.
I'm sorry.
No,
Hopalong Cassidy was my guy.
I just love the name because nobody ever forgets my name.
Exactly.
I have a hard time picking up and remembering everybody else's name, but nobody forgets mine.
That's awesome, right?
Yeah.
And so you've enjoyed having that name.
Oh,
it
yeah.
wasn't like you're mad at your parents or anything. You just thought that was... I love your line of they were horsing around.
How long were you in that hospital, Roy?
15 months.
Wow.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah, I had 9 operations on my hand trying to get it to work. And at the same time, Miss White was my teacher. She taught me how to eat with my right hand and write with my right hand and clean myself with the right hand. She virtually kept me going because I... The fella that was behind me on the trail when the bomb went off lost his right arm. And he ended up 2 beds away from me in the hospital. He would not talk to me all the time he was in there. He blamed me for stepping on a landmine.
Wow.
Wow.
So,
do you keep in touch with George Washington?
Unfortunately, the year after I got out, he talked somebody into taking him out on a boat on Lake Michigan and committed suicide.
Boy, that's sad.
Wow. So,
he had a body cast on for the entire time that I knew him. And when they took the body cast off, he was fused together. He couldn't bend over or nothing. So,
you know, one thing I was talking to a buddy of mine, stepped on a mine, Marine in Vietnam, blew out like the backside of his leg and things like that. And he said, at first you're so happy to be alive. It's mind-boggling, no matter how bad your injuries are. So, but then you start feeling a little bit sorry for yourself until you look around at the people around you. And it's like, okay, that guy's missing 2 legs. That guy's missing an arm and a leg. You guys are so appreciative. The ones I've met, the one who went, up to be alive and where they are and to be here today talking about it versus some of the guys that were in those hospitals with them?
Well, the first thing I thought of was I was left-handed. And I remember saying to the corpsman that I lose my hand because it was all bloody and I couldn't see anything. So I lost two fingers. One finger was in the ground and I picked it up and put it in my pocket. That's another story.
Okay, yes.
Wow. They took me to the field hospital. They x-rayed me and they found my finger in the wrong direction in my shirt pocket. So they sewed it back on. Otherwise, I'd only have one less. But I always say I gave a finger to my country.
I think the greatest part about you guys is you guys have such gallows humor. You can laugh and make fun of the, you know, most serious things that ever happened to you. Yeah. And like my one buddy, who Marine, the one who I told you about, they thought he was pretty much dead. They put him on the chopper, okay? And they're like, touching, said, man, God bless you. You know, hope you make it. You know, hang in there. And he wasn't moving, not saying a word. And all of a sudden, out of the blues, it's like rising from the dead. He jumps up and goes, hey, Doc, can you give me another shot of that bleep?
And while you're
like, Rich is okay.
While you're in the hospital, just real quickly, when your mom came to see you.
Oh, my, I was sitting on my leg. I had no idea what the telegraph said. So I'm sitting on the bed. I know. I was laying in the bed and I had to use the bathroom. So I got up and walked to the bathroom. My mother passed out because she thought I had lost my leg. And she just went ballistic. She couldn't take that.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Roy Rogers. I'm so glad you're here.
So great to see you again.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media Spotlight. We now take you to a segment from Busted Pencils This Week, where Dr. Tim Slacker sat down with Dr. Joe Gothard, the incoming superintendent of the Madison Metropolitan School District.
Busted Pencils fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Live from the Civic Media headquarters on State Street in Madison. Our guest, Dr. Joe Gothard, the new superintendent for Madison Metropolitan School District, has been talking to us now for the first half hour. Dr. Gothard, so I asked the question, equity, academic achievement, are those complementary terms or are they in conflict? And I'll give you, yes, no conflict, but tell me a little bit about when you hear academic achievement and then you hear equity, what's that mean for Dr. Joe Gothard as the leader of Madison Metropolitan School District?
Well, I thought about answering by saying yes.
Okay.
And then I thought about saying they can be. I think that, it's interesting because as a decision maker, as a leader, if you go out and talk to families, students, community about what they want in their schools, you might hear something that is in direct conflict of what research might say around equity, around mm-hmm. how you serve students. And so there's this conflict of, do you listen to the people or do you listen to the research? Do you listen to the history on segregation, for example? In St. Paul, we created an East African elementary magnet school. Mm. Because our families were telling us they did not feel seen, heard, and valued in our school, and therefore they were leaving.
Right.
So we created a school. Now that school's open to anyone, but as you can imagine, it's highly enrolled Somali students and other East African representation there. And, they are still going to follow the same curriculum. Of course, they're going to have language and culture part of their social mm-hmm. studies and integrated in the rest of their school day. But I think you can accomplish both. If students feel seen, heard, and valued, if students feel safe, if students see staff who look like them, to me that is addressing equity. And by doing so, you can also have high achievement possible in ways that it may not be in other spaces.
Yeah, and I ask this question now because it has been, particularly in the last 3 to 4 years, the What I would say, you know, the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, as if for some reason that those goals aren't worthy anymore. And you hear people going, you know, schools, it's about academic achievement. And typically when you hear that question, it's like, wait, so you're talking about test scores, right? Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know, the test scores show that certain kids aren't achieving. Like, well, most of us know that, right? But there's, to me, I get concerned because I feel a renewed emphasis on saying, actually, if we're not addressing academic achievement, we need to not address diversity, equity, and inclusion, because those do exclude somehow a commitment to academic achievement. So that's why I was kind of asking that question. Is it equity? Is it inclusion? Is it academic achievement? And you said, yes. The answer is, the real answer is, it's all of them.
It is. You know, in February 2018, a group of student advocates on our Board of Education challenged the board and administration with creating an ethnic studies class, but part two was making it a graduation requirement. Mm-hmm. And of course, the pandemic got in the way, but we fulfilled that in 2020. And, 2021. So it became a requirement. And, you know, I think for the most part, it has been a good gauge in terms of what does equity and achievement mean side by side. Of course, you have students who are flourishing in it and really enjoy it. Others can't quite figure it out. But I think it's been important for the community to come together to understand underrepresented histories in their learning.
Well, can you say, because if we're going to actually talk about academic achievement gaps, of which we say there are, we have to actually figure out why we have them, right? And I think this is, you know, I felt like in pre-2020, we were making lots of inroads at helping people understand that if you're going to be concerned, if you are for some reason only concerned about test scores, well, if you want to see them go up, we've got to address historic systemic inequities.
Right. And I think one thing that you and your listeners should know is that I was in a community where it's quite the opposite of there being any kind of divide. It was, you're not doing enough. There was always that weight on my shoulder of, are you seeing, are you hearing? Are you following through with what our communities need, our diverse communities need? So quite different from, you know, a lot of my colleagues, certainly around the country, but also, you know, right in the metro of Minnesota, you know, like 9 miles from my house is where George Floyd was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't open your eyes to what equity means in an institution of learning for pre-K through 12th grade students, it was a really difficult and challenging time for us to recalibrate and understand what does equity mean.
Yeah, you were there. I forgot. I mean, what was it like being a school leader of a large metropolitan school district during that time?
We had come off a 5-day teacher strike and went right into distance learning for the pandemic. George Floyd was murdered. Our 31-year-old board chair, Marnie Zhang, just an incredible Hmong woman, died of COVID all within the first 2.5 months of that stretch from March on in 2020. So it was, you know, to have a time where as a school leader, as a member of a school community, we were all, you know, in distance learning or you know, not allowed to come together. It was challenging. The first thing you want to do is convene with people for comfort, for understanding. And it just wasn't possible at that time. So it made it extra challenging. And of course, our community was, you know, there was anger in the streets as well. Not quite as extensive as Minneapolis, but, you know, right there adjacent to the river, here our community was also struggling.
Man, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. What's that? That's that, Jess.
True as the bell rings.
Oh, it is.
You know what time it is, Tim.
I do know what time it is, Jess. Democracy in action time. Take it away, Jess.
Today on Busted Pencils, the democracy in action value that we are highlighting is justice. The concept that all people should be treated fairly and equally, regardless of where they come from and who they are. This is a value that we try to highlight every day on Busted Pencils. And Dr. Gothard, you are presenting this so clearly for us right now. And I have to tell you, we were at the Wisconsin Public Education Network's annual summit warm-up day, I suppose. And I asked everyone, what do you believe is the purpose of public education? And about 90% of them said it had to do with justice. what we are doing here. This is democracy in action. This is exemplifying the value of justice.
Wow. Dr. Gothard, so actually, you are our democracy in action candidate. So you didn't know that. You're like, hey, we sprung that on you. But yeah, justice, right? You know, it's like back to that moment, too, in the George Floyd. And you said, you know, and then what came after that? The advocacy around saying this can't stand, this can't happen. And in fact, at the conference today, we saw a little bit of a timeline and saying, you know, in fact, the activism around equity, discrimination, right? Like, we have to get after these things. And now, though, too, to realize that actually there's now been a counterattack back on that movement that is actually kind of framed going, you know, being an advocate for justice, being an advocate for equity, for being an advocate for diversity and inclusion is somehow a problem. And I knew that, you know, from the time we met, you know, 10 years ago, and then our interview first, that you were a diversity, equity, and inclusion, justice, academic achievement guy. So I was wondering about this coming into, you know, does the new political framing around DEI, do you feel that challenging? Do you feel the need to tone back potentially commitments to diversity, equity, and inclusion? You know, again, I'm kind of asking the same question I did, but if you just continue to help me make more sense of that.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think so. And again, it's really important too when you're considering taking a new job at this level, understand your Board of Education and what they are looking for, what they want to support as well. And I think our 7 board members right now will tell you quite the opposite is true, that that we really have to look for ways to make sure that what we're doing is equitable, that it is serving through a justice lens. And our students want the same thing. You know, I'll share with you some of the most powerful experiences I've had in the last 7 years have been with students at some of the most difficult times. You know, I kind of took on a really difficult middle school. Was hearing from staff that it was unsafe. You know, we didn't want to be here. We need more support. So I just started showing up at the school. And after about the 4th visit, I told the principal, I want to start a group here. And I don't want you to pick the students who you might think I want to see. See the students running in the halls. See the students that aren't on task. That's who I want to meet with. And I learned so much through working with this group of young Black men, young Black boys, I should say, 11, 12, 13 years old, that it changed my perspective on how I want to lead and how I want to center youth voice in the work that I do. I think many times we see behavior as the many ways that students don't want to engage or don't care about learning, and the opposite is quite true. We just haven't sat down and found the environment where a student feels like they can be comfortable with who they are, whether they're homeless, whether they, you know, may not have a nuclear family like so many of our families do. These are all burdens that our children bring to school each day. And I think to have somebody in a suit, sit down with them, really listen and follow up and follow through and be consistent in their lives. To me, it was, you know, again, not talking about me, but the practice of equity. I've tried really hard to break out of the norms of the superintendent and practice in a way that can be influential to the way that I lead and hopefully help others understand too.
So this then, it's reminding me of going back to the email you sent today that again was just seen as such a wonderful thing. You put a comment here about going throughout this school year, I encourage all of you to continue to ask, how are the children?
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about.
100%. And I think we often forget that. We really do. And it's taken some really dark times, I should say, for me to understand how important that is. And what I often find is that when things aren't going so well, or when there's a really challenging situation in the community or the school, that many times the students are the last voice we go to ask them, how are you? You know, how is this impacting you? And what I found by flipping that a little bit is that many times you get perspectives that are vastly different. And that is not saying that staff or families or community are wrong or right. It's just saying that you have to. I feel like I have to, and I'm compelled to make sure that decisions I'm making, people I'm trying to influence, it has to be guided in what I'm hearing from our students as well. So it's something I want to be very intentional about here in Madison.
I mean, the whole idea, how are the children? Because I, you know, and you think it's like, well, you're in schools. So of course we ask that question. A lot of times it seems like that question is secondary.
And Tim, here's the thing. I mean, our schools are set up this way. Our students are pushed through the mold of school, and unfortunately they are forced to conform. And many times they shed who they are, whether it's their race, identity, language, culture, how they were raised, how they feel about where they are as an academic achiever. And I just think that that is, it's unfortunate that that's what public schools in many places have become. And we just have to do better in understanding individual students and making sure that our decisions are reflecting each individual.
What you just said, if my co-host, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, was here right now, he would have really gone in for that question, because you kind of laid out, he goes, Tim, you know, we are so good at teaching people how to do school, yeah, and we forget that actually maybe school sometimes is the problem, and that we're helping people fit a mold that is unnatural.
Yeah.
When it comes to be successful in school, may not have really anything to be successful in life.
And Tim, I don't want you to get me in trouble. It's not school people are the problem. It's the system of school.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still talking about credits, hours, time served. I mean, we learned during the pandemic, right? Let's not talk about, you know, how good or bad that was. But we did learn that many students felt self-determination and self-guidance was a way that was better for their own mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that that led to great breakthroughs, but it was at least a peek into another way for some students, that the way that we look at the rigidity of our schedules and our routines, mm-hmm, that maybe they're not always the best.
No, I remember that too. Yeah, we had lots of people calling in and going, hey, some of my students who are now participating and they never participated before. Our guest is Dr. Joe Gothard, Busted Pencils, fully led at Education Talk. He is the new superintendent of Madison Metropolitan Schools. 855-752-4842 is the number. It's last chance to give Dr. Gothard a call. More when we come back.
Busted Pencils is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings at 6 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
We round out this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight with a clip from Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, where Pete was joined by Steve Segrin to talk wiffle ball and so much more.
The 920. Jim in Appleton says, a song I could live happily ever after without ever hearing again, 500 miles. I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a great song if you're on the Oregon Trail. Steve Segrin is here. He's an actor, comedian, and an artist, and he is sharing with us his list of songs that he never needs to hear again, and I agree with almost all of them so far. We left off with Fleetwood Mac, You Can Go Your Own Way. So,
yeah.
What do you think, Steve, about my band suggestion, Bon Jovi? Do they hold up to you?
No. But the thing is, I don't like Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
So I don't care if I hear anything by them ever again. That's the thing. It's like it's easy to pick a song I don't like.
Yeah.
But these are songs that have gotten into your head. You know,
yeah,
and you don't, and they're in there forever now. You know, and Bon Jovi isn't one of the, doesn't have anything that's, oh, wait a minute, what? I can't think. What's a good famous Bon Jovi song?
Well, that Shot Through the Heart and the steel guitar.
Oh,
like a steel,
yeah,
horse,
okay, that's going on the list.
Yeah, it's just, okay, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what they used to play on when I was a doorman on Division Street when I was in college. That's what they used to play to clear the dance floor. They would put Shot Through the Heart and everybody would just flee. And there are certain bands I hear where it's like, I was never a huge fan of Bon Jovi, but he gets mentioned like with Springsteen and Bob Seger. And I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I just hear it. I'm like, ew. You know, it just does not hold up. Like Styx is the same way to me. And there are very few Styx songs I would listen to now.
Styx. I'm the same. But they don't have anything that's like embedded in my brain forever.
What about Babe?
Babe, which
you know, it's
that?
You, Steve. Whenever
what I keep thinking is, come sail away, come sail away, come sail away with me.
I'll go with you, but are you going to sing the whole time? Because then I don't want to go.
here's what I'm going to add to the list for sure. James Taylor, Fire and Rain.
Oh, yeah. I love that song, but I could see that.
But it's like I said, it's in your brain. And even if you don't hear it, it'll pop up. You know
right.
what I mean? Even if you're not hearing the radio, because I wake up in the morning and songs go through my head all the time. And a lot of times it's songs like that. You
right,
know?
Right.
And I got to listen to something else to get it out of my head. Right. I'll put that on my list now. But the last thing I have on my list, the entire Kiss discography.
You don't like the song Lick It Up?
I don't like it. There's a video on YouTube where they're playing, just finished playing Beth, I think. Isn't that the song?
Oh, yeah.
Beth, you call in. And in the audience has got one of these laser pointers. And I guess he's rapping the band. So I don't know who these guys, what their names are, but one of the guys gets up. He's like, hey, you with the laser pointer, I'm going to come out there and stick it up your ass. You know? Then the other Kiss guys get up. And they all stand around him, actually tough, like they're like angry clowns or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
It's on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
That's funny. Yeah, you know, do you remember the comedian Harlan Williams?
Yeah.
I worked with him at the
he
Laugh
was hot
Factory.
For like 5 minutes.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, exactly. He was hot for 5 minutes and got in 5 of the biggest grossing films ever and is probably just collecting like residual checks. But he was funny. I liked him personally. He was a nice guy. But he on stage at the Laugh Factory, I was the middle act and he was the headliner. The crowd was not great one night and he sang the entire song Beth.
Oh, no.
Like, he just sang it and the crowd was like listening to him. Like they were almost like, well, this is better than what you were doing before. Oh, it's so great.
I thought you said you got a standing ovation afterwards.
All right. I have a couple for you I want to get your opinions on. Conrad, okay. Let's go with the first one I sent you. All right, that's enough. That is a song that makes me hate New York.
I'm with you.
Never need to hear. That's on my list.
Nope. Yeah.
And then
hell with New York.
Right. And then do the other one, Conrad.
I've heard there was. The secret
oh, God. No, that's got to go on my list.
All right. I have,
and it's not just that song. It's any version
right.
of that song. Any version.
I actually had never heard that version, and Conrad found it, and I was like, no, what's this? He goes, that's that song. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I still hate it.
that's the original, right?
Yeah,
the original
that's version. Leonard Cohen. Yeah. But yeah. I have to say something. Conrad, I said Lights.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where's Lights?
I don't...
Steve, we got to work this out. Because that was on my list, but I wanted you to hear. All right, do you have Lights ready, Conrad?
I do
all right,
not.
We don't have to play it. Steve, the song Lights by Journey.
Oh, when the lights go down. That was...
And then they sang it in My City when they're in San Francisco, and it was
in
just like,
city.
Come on, terrible.
Yeah.
All right, so I
remember hearing an interview with that guy, and he said the original lyric was, the lights go down in the city, blah, 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 in L.A.
Oh, really?
But then they changed it to City by the Bay, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was L.A. originally, yeah, but who cares? Journey, everything that Journey did is on my list.
Oh, is that right? Anything.
It is now, yes, because I forgot about Journey, yeah.
You know what song I love by them that I don't ever hear anymore is that song, Who's Crying Now? That's a great song. And they always play Don't Stop Believin' or Lights.
Don't Stop Believin'.
Yeah. And whatever, I liked it, but that's one I don't really need to hear. But Who's Crying Now, I like. There's like some of the B-sides of theirs I wouldn't mind hearing. But here's one I hate so much, Steve. I'm choking on my own rage saying it. Love in an Elevator by Aerosmith.
Oh, I heard you talk about that before.
Just Loving so an bad. Living it up favorite. When I'm going down. Get it, Steve? It's sex.
I know. It's one of my favorite songs.
Here's another one.
I got married to that song.
That was your first dance. Taking Care of Business. Awful.
Blackwood Turner Overdrive.
Yeah. Never need to hear it.
Yes. No, never again. Yeah, that's going on my list.
And then Happy, the Feral.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. And then Sam Elliott's voice. I'm done with it. I love it. I love him. But I never need to hear Sam.
You know what? I think I'm there. I'm there with you. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I just heard it in the Smokey the Bear commercial, right? Yeah.
That's what made me think of it. Hey, can you stick around through the news, Steve? We could talk a little TV and movies. You mind?
Okay, sure.
Yeah. All right, fantastic. Steve Segrin is going to stick around through the Civic Media award-winning news. So we're going to talk about TV and movies. I think we moved on, unless we think of another song.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media radio network and airs across the network weekday evenings from 7 till 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.